Well, in podcast 395, I thought I'll do a podcast at twilight because these current summer days are so amazing in the way that they feel just after sunset. And I've started and stopped a couple of times because, you know, I'm right in the flight path for Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. And of course, every time I start to do a podcast, you don't hear this wonderful evening. You hear plane after plane approaching the runways. And of course, it sounds like I'm still at the air show. But I am sitting by the fire in the evening twilight. And I'll go, I've got the microphone set up to capture the fire as well as all this, these amazing night sounds. I'll go put a log on the fire. I'm sitting on a plastic bucket, so I got to get up here. So, and if you listen very carefully, if there's not a plane, occasionally you will hear a bug hitting one of the microphones I have set up to record the fire, which I can't get too close because I don't want to smoke the microphone up. So that's what's going on. I love doing this stuff, broadcasting, podcasting live from outside on a beautiful night like this and having the fire and everything. I don't get a chance to do it because this flat out here by the side, by the studio at the broadcast bunker is so, usually so wet that you can't even come down here till July or August. And it's completely covered by trees. You'll hear the groan of the trees from time to time, and you'll hear stuff going down on Highway 100 back and forth, or 62, depending on which way they're going. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and do this, and we'll hope that we don't have a whole bunch of planes approaching. I went up and ate a little while ago, and I think most of the planes have landed. So we get a little window here between about 10 o'clock and around 11:30 midnight when the final flights come in. So I want to talk about something that has been bothering me lately. And this is this situation where it seems like wherever you turn, people don't care about details. They just want the problems fixed, and they want it fixed right now. Doesn't matter what you think ails the country. So we're going to talk about that in podcast 395. This is the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. And I got to mention that xgovernmentcars.com is the only car dealer that rocks as hard as you do. xgovernmentcars.com gets you approved for your car loan in minutes. And they also take trades. And I can't emphasize enough that they take trades. So whether you're looking for a Crown Vic, a Charger, a Chevy Impala, or an Expedition, or Yukon, or Suburban. They have ex-government trucks, and they also have ex-government cars. They have a huge selection, great service after the sale. Ed Johnson will make deals, and then, of course, you get approved for credit regardless of your credit rating, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So now is the time to get your butt down to 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley and check out the selection. I've often mentioned that Ed, over the years, has gotten really, really good at finding the really good ex-government cars. These are fleet-maintained government vehicles. They're one owner, and then they're sold to people like Ed, and Ed's the granddaddy of all this. He finds them, gets them all ready, and gets them out for you. And I have had three Crown Vics. They're great cars, and I now have a Ford Ambulance, which is a great ex-government truck that they helped me get, and they've been great all through. So if you want more information, call 763-777-8782 or go to xgovernmentcars.com. You can apply online safely and securely. And yes, I'm going to get the bullhorn, which I brought out here with me, and wake up. Well, the neighbors are still awake, but I'm going to give it a shot.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Well, I've certainly said it. I've said on the radio, and I've said at meetings, and I've braided people many times and said, I don't care about the details. I want it fixed. Sometimes it works if you say that. Sometimes it works if you just say do something or shut it down, it's pumping mud. It certainly satisfies. It certainly satisfies crowds. It satisfies callers. It's satisfying just to say it, because sometimes it seems like problems just simply cannot be solved simply. Sometimes simple solutions are the fix, but when it comes to government and politics and society today, the hard truth is you have to understand the complexities and you have to be smart enough to clear a path to solving complex problems, even if your solution is simple, even if it's a simple solution that you know will work because you've seen it work in the past. You know, in about the past, I guess it's been in the past year, but mostly this spring, I've spoken to a lot of groups. I've traveled around the country. I've covered a few live political events in Minnesota, Wisconsin, down in Iowa. I've been to the U.S. Capitol. It's one of the great benefits of being able to be independent and to choose what I want to talk about, when I want to talk about it, and sometimes where to talk about it. And all along, I have been genuine and authentic about what I've observed, and I've tried to give people the benefit of the doubt, people who are honestly concerned about their country and its direction, and whether they're actually serving as political leaders or whether they're just people that come to meetings. And the frustration and the concern that people have usually is vented at the state capitol, at Washington, D.C., or Wall Street, or to a specific person, or to a political figure, or person in the news, or toward a movement, institution, or situation, or icon of a movement. And then there are the people that I pass on the highway in the mobile podcast command unit or meet in towns and cities, literally from coast to coast, who go about their daily lives seemingly oblivious to the crisis facing the nation. These are, in fact, the resilient American people of all varieties, including you and me, working through, around, or in spite of the crises we hear about almost on an hourly basis, crises that demand our immediate attention and an immediate solution. And not just a solution, but a grand solution that ends the problem forever, or hopefully before the end of the show. It doesn't matter if it's about the economy, if it's about society and morality, if it's about injustice and the abuse of power, it's about or about money and the role in our society, or opportunity or the lack of opportunity, or foreign threats. And you can name your favorite foreign threat. Whatever you would add to the list that I've just given you, these are the kinds of topics that are complex but require immediate solutions because we demand it. Most of the time, what I encounter in the groups that I speak to is a simplistic definition of the problem, whatever it is, and then what follows is a strong advocacy of a simplistic solution to the problem, whatever it is, usually rhetorical. Frustration and anger leading to a pronounced advocacy of just doing something, anything, to make the source of the frustration and the anger and the pain, whatever it is, go away. Boom. Problem solved. Except as much as we want it to be, life is not simple. Big problems are not simple. Even our own problems are not simple. For example, you might say to your brother, you know, you have to quit drinking. But getting him to quit drinking is not a simple solution. It turns into be quite a complicated situation. Sometimes a problem starts innocently and simplistically enough, but when it becomes a big problem, it can't be solved simplistically anymore. Yet this is what people want whenever I go out and I talk to people. And in the circus that has become American politics today, the frustration and anger, whether it is right or left, demands simple solutions right now. And what has happened is politicians have risen to propose nothing but to talk in simplistic terms, telling the truth. They say that they're telling the truth with words that resonate. Here's just a few, and it isn't just from one specific candidate, but here's a few. I will take all the money from the rich and build for the common man. So the money that these people who are super rich don't need, I'll take it and I will fix all of the problems. I will close down the U.S. borders. I will take the fight to ISIS by introducing them to the B-1 bomber. That's one of my favorites. I will fight for the unborn. I will take Congress to task and solve gridlock. I will be a uniter, not a divider. Doesn't matter if you agree or disagree with all of these rhetorical statements. It's just that this is a common thing in politics today, and especially right now. Or, we have to do this and we have to do that right now. Or it's Washington that's the problem. Or I will take the power from Wall Street and give it back to you. Or I'm going to fix the economy. Or I'm going to make America great again. But they don't tell you how they're going to do it. And in a world driven by vastly unreliable and inaccurate political polling, which is what the political world is right now, and the cage match debates broadcast worldwide with two tiers of supposedly conservative candidates determined by the same worthless poll numbers, in a world where media attention, which is driven by polling, determines political viability, even relevance of anything, whether you are a country music star going through a divorce or a bankrupt local restaurateur or someone going through a sex change operation, it is all about the clicks, it is all about the hits, it is all about the reality show, it is all about taking it to the next level. All of this controlled by the bigger fool at the top of the media food chain, whoever, whatever that is. And in this environment, it's becoming obvious to me that we get the candidate we deserve. We get the leaders that we deserve. When those candidates become the leader by popular acclaim, suddenly the simple solutions aren't simple anymore, and they aren't able to do what they said they would do. We are living through the presidency of a man who became president by selling simple solutions to complicated problems, and he has been unable to solve those complicated problems. Even people in his own party are furious at him because he has been unable to solve those kinds of problems with what he thought were simple solutions. And the people are again dissatisfied, frustrated, and angry because these leaders, whoever they are, don't do what they think they're going to do. And then the process begins again. And when you talk to people who have been out and they go in, and then you ask them, why aren't you doing what people want you to do? They say, these people don't understand what it's like down here, meaning Washington or St. Paul or wherever, you know, Springfield. Party orientation doesn't matter. There doesn't even seem to be a political ideology here in some cases. No specific workable solutions are presented, whether you're talking about, you know, somebody talking about socialism or whether you're talking about somebody who is as conservative, quote unquote, as they come. It's just rhetoric and bromides. And then you have Iowans who go from political event to political event, drunk on national media attention, happy to expound for the media on why we need a businessman to run the country or a socialist champion or a favorite son. So let's take any one area. Let's take the economy, for example, and just think about this. Diagnosing the problem is extremely complex. Is 2.5% growth occasionally with, you know, with stopping and starting 1% or 2.5% growth the new normal? If it is, why would you say that? If it isn't, why wouldn't you say that? Why would you disagree with that statement? Do you have an answer for that? What are the economic implications of an idea like the flat tax, which I actually like? Do you know? Are you able to converse freely about the pros and cons of a flat tax or a consumer tax, sometimes called the fair tax? Two different things. What about the political challenges of adjusting the tax code for a flat tax, which, according to some proposals, could mean, among other things, the elimination of the mortgage tax credit? And then a surprising number of people who don't pay much tax now, unbeknownst to many, and will be paying more. A surprising number and type of people you would be surprised to find don't pay tax, and they, again, are not necessarily the poor, they are not necessarily the rich. Why would a flat tax be a good idea economically? And that's just tax policy. What about people who say, I will repeal Obamacare? This was something that Michelle Bachmann pledged, and I think just recently Scott Walker pledged it. Okay, how are you going to do that? How do you replace it? Do you replace it? Because if you don't, then you just replace it with the problem that you had at the beginning, and we start the process all over again. Now, I'm not in favor, I wasn't in favor, and don't like Obamacare, but it's law, and it has survived two or three Supreme Court challenges. Now you're going to repeal it, and how are you going to get that through a Congress and Senate that is sure to be split on party lines? Which is why some of the candidates are talking about, quote-unquote, fixing Obamacare. What about three big insurance companies? By the way, this kind of oligopoly was supposed to be ended by the ACA itself. But what about three now big insurance companies consolidating and their lobbyists and three insurance companies that have massively increased profits because of the bill they claim to have opposed. So you've created an infrastructure legally that is beginning to show profit for insurance companies, and that's a huge lobby. You're going to go in there and you're going to repeal Obamacare. And even if you're right to repeal Obamacare, how are you going to do it? Here's another one. I will close the border. Just this week, Congress supposedly passed a bill that would defund sanctuary cities. It has no hope of passing the Senate and certainly no hope of getting signed by the president. Anti-government advocates know the federal government is hard-pressed to tell cities and states what they can and can't do, and usually the only thing that they can control is funding, and that has a requirement of an act of Congress. Even at the presidential level, this is why we've been having so many fights about presidential power, because he tries to do things that really Congress is supposed to do. Enforcing existing immigration law is a start, but what happens when families are separated, businesses are closed down, all that ends up on Fox News and CNN 24 hours a day? And what expectations to the rule do you make when this becomes something that we see blowing up on social media? So there's no question something needs to be done. The question is, how do we get it done, even though it's a complex problem and it will require a complex solution? It started innocently enough because back in the 40s and 50s, farmers for years have been using cheap labor from Mexico and from Latin America to pick crops, and now it's turned into a very complex problem socially. Here's one of my favorites, and I hear this all the time from all kinds of candidates. I'm going to take the fight to ISIS. Well, okay, you know, ISIS exists partially because we invaded Iraq to begin with. How many troops? How long? How many casualties? And what happens after? What happens when the casualties become the 24-hour news cycle? Well, we'll just use special forces. Okay, how many? And let me get this straight. We're going to send a few hundred guys in with no support, and they're just going to clean up the problem, like the Expendables, like the movie, right? They're just going to solve ISIS by going in and killing a bunch of them, and we don't know what happens afterwards. So that's a simplistic solution that doesn't really make any sense when you subject it to an actual discussion of the problem. And I could actually do a whole podcast about foreign policy issues that aren't easily solved, because everything that you do creates another problem. Well, we just need to withdraw from the rest of the country, let them solve their own problems. Well, that has its own kind of problem. And in fact, we're actually practicing that kind of foreign policy as we speak, and it's not working very well. I will do something about the morality of this country, or something needs to be done about the morality of this country. Well, what are you going to do? Mandate that everybody become a Boy Scout? Mandate that a law is passed? Use the government to intervene in people's lives? Isn't that something that most conservatives don't want? Create a state-sanctioned religious movement that requires people to be spiritually fed every week, shut down the media, eliminate everything you don't like. Are these things that are actual solutions to fixing the, quote, morality problem in the country? Inequality is so great in this country, we just need to take everything the rich don't need. To do what? To build schools and parks that we apparently need, but we don't. Public transportation that apparently we need, but is extremely expensive and doesn't seem to do anything. As long as we can put Uber out of business and keep the cab drivers protected, we're okay. And who decides how the money is spent? We went through this problem with the stimulus package. And moreover, if you took all the money away from the rich people, you could run the country for about 3 months, and then you would have eliminated the productive class of the country. And most communist countries discovered that, unfortunately, too late after they embraced communism and tyranny. They're sending our jobs to China. I hear this one all the time, and that has to stop. We need to get our jobs back to China. I will bring jobs back to the United States. Well, the fact is that China has eliminated millions of jobs of IT. They're going to eliminate millions of jobs of IT. China has improved its living standards and the pay increases. And now China is being China'd by low-cost competitors, low-cost labor competitors with comparative advantage like Vietnam and the Philippines. In fact, they are eliminating big jobs, and both countries, the U.S. and China, have eliminated IT jobs due to IT. They've eliminated manufacturing jobs in the last 20 to 30 years, 50 years, and it's a trend which is going to continue. Manufacturing in this country is never going to come back to what it was in the 1950s because we don't need people, because you can make the same amount of steel today with 30 people that you used to take 30,000 people to make. One of my favorites is, we've got to get all these people off welfare. And if you hear it in conservative circles, it usually means that the people they don't like are on welfare, and it's the poor people that are stealing the welfare. And, you know, there's clearly a problem with government largesse, state and federal welfare in this country as it relates to the poor. The problem is, when you start talking about getting people off welfare, you forget about your uncle, who is in Social Security disability because he spent his life working at the steel mill that now only requires 30 people, or because he was a flight attendant and got burned out, or because he was a teacher, or whatever, or because he was a ne'er-do-well. Or individual farmers who benefit from tens of thousands of dollars individually in subsidies, meaning direct payments to them for not growing or growing, multiplied by millions and millions of farmers. Or so-called independent businessmen who survive on government contracts, up to and including giant government contractors, and they aren't always defense contractors. So when you start unpacking the rhetoric, the reality of complex problems and the complex nature of our lives and the challenges we face becomes obvious. And nobody wants to hear the facts, and nobody wants to hear that these problems are difficult and complex and hard to solve. They just want someone to tell them what they want to hear. And that is what is going on in politics today. And that is being amplified all over the place by a very poor media which ill serves us. You know, sometimes there is no right or wrong. Sometimes there just is something to be done. Sometimes it is wrong. Sometimes it is right. But you have to be able to identify the problem first, then a few possible solutions. You have to vet those solutions, and then you have to be able to build support politically to create a path to the solution. It's always this way, and it has always been this way. And when things become so complicated that we have to make something happen right now, that is usually the worst case scenario. The Civil War, a depression, World War II, things like that. And when you go to solve a problem like that, each of the steps is fraught with more problems. World War II, even despite the history we've been taught, did not solve all the problems. It took years to solve the problems in Europe. It has taken years to solve the problems in Asia, and we're still dealing with the problems left over from World War II. So you learn to manage problems going forward because they are complex. But the commentators blame the political process and the media and the pollsters and the politicians. And so then you hear the people blaming the political process and the media and the pollsters and the politicians. They blame urban areas or they blame rural areas. They blame this kind of person or that kind of person. They blame the system. They blame Washington. They blame the political parties. They blame Wall Street, gridlock, rich people, poor people, and so on. It's none of those things. The fault lies with us. If the American Republic did not exist, we would have some other kind of democratic government, and we would have the same kinds of problems. If we had a parliamentary country, we would have the same kinds of problems. Look at Britain, look at Greece, look at France. It's the same situation. 13 colonies originally ratified the Articles of Confederation in 1781. The U.S. Constitution was signed, I think, in 1787, and then the Bill of Rights added to it and ratified, the whole thing ratified in something like 1791. At that time, the frontiers of this country were the western reaches of the 13 states out east. So if you've been in West Virginia, if you've been in western Maine, if you've been in western New Hampshire, if you've been in western New York State, if you've been in western Massachusetts or North Carolina or Georgia, you have been in the frontier states of America going back, you know, more than 200 years. And I think it's fair to say of the citizens then that most people were almost completely self-sufficient. They may not have been able to read, all of them, but they knew how to trap, they knew how to feed themselves, they knew how to build, they knew how to take care of themselves. They had to be self-sufficient. They didn't need much government. They really didn't want much government. Life expectancy, though, in spite of that, was roughly 40 years, largely because infant mortality was very high. If you lived through childhood to you know, puberty, which at that point would have been young adulthood, you could possibly live as long as your early 50s if you were really, really, really strong. Most people didn't. Most people were married at age 14 or 15, sometimes 13, and most of the time their husband or wife died within a couple of years, and they were eventually remarried. People left home and never came back. I mean, there are all kinds of stories about the frontier that means that it was no place for the weak, and the weak did not survive, whether they were weak mentally or weak physically or weak in some other way. There was no one to call. There was no ambulance. There was no supermarket. There was no hospital. So people had to take care of themselves. And while I think adherence to the principles of the Constitution is our best path, I also accept the fact that those principles have been debated throughout our history and will continue to be debated long after everyone hearing this, unless they hear it, several decades from now by accident, are long dead and gone. The fact is, we are living in an extraordinary time, both in our country and in the world. We live in a very complex society, pulled together and apart by strands of thought, technology, tribal alliances, businesses, business, spiritual and leisure pursuits, and anything with an ability to communicate and amplify instantly the biggest as well as the smallest and sometimes the silliest things, the silliest elements. Some people remain self-reliant, but the fact is most people aren't in our society today. We've become used to being furious if our triple espresso latte isn't prepared perfectly and handed to us with our name on the cup within a minute or so of ordering. We are not prepared when a hack attack shuts down a website or somebody changes a sign on a freeway and it causes a traffic jam all the way back to Tuscaloosa, or if our flight to Nashville isn't smooth from boarding to disembarking, or if our cable service isn't glitch-free, or if Wi-Fi doesn't work properly. And yet, none of us look back and say, look how far we've come. Look how amazing these inventions are. Look how amazing it is that we can fly comfortably and safely for the most part. And yet, in our places of business, we sometimes forgive mistakes because nobody knows what to do, or because Susan is working from home today, or we just want to go to lunch early. And that's fine. I mean, I think most people have been this way and will always be this way. But it's just that today we know about it, and sometimes we know about it right away, and sometimes the whole world knows about it if somebody makes a mistake, which people will inevitably do. But when it comes to politics, the desire, the frustration, that desire to have that latte right away, the desire to send back the salad because it has the raspberry vinaigrette and we wanted lemon and oil, that kind of desire, that the excruciating need to solve a problem immediately becomes a big problem because it doesn't work in a political system originally designed to knit together 13 colonies, ensure that commerce was conducted freely across those 13 state borders, protect the rights of individuals, and protect the national borders, which, by the way, it didn't do very well in 1812. An angry and frustrated population fed by a media driven by clicks and listens, featuring an increasingly emotional content day in and day out, which does not serve us well. This doesn't make an effort to understand the political process very easy, or the complexities of the problems facing us very easy to understand. We just want someone to spit out solutions like getting a new latte or the salad or the chicken and the rib dinner we ordered wasn't right and we want it fixed. So here it is. Here's a new dinner. We want to be accommodated right now because we live in a society where iPhone doesn't work, we'll give you a new one. You know, you need to have that fixed, we'll take care of it because this is the way things operate. And we think we will get someone who does just that. And in fact, we may just get someone who does just that. And I'm here to tell you, it will be a disaster. Some would argue we already have that. But, you know, the thing that I would say right now, I don't know if it's going to be this way, is we haven't seen a worst case situation yet. And I often tell the story of talking to my friend, the investment banker, and I said at one point, what's the worst thing that could happen? And he said, well, the worst case scenario, World War II, the Depression, the Civil War. These are worst case scenarios that can happen if leadership doesn't do what it's supposed to do and looks for simplistic solutions or just runs away from the problem. We had a Civil War because President Buchanan was a coward, and he wouldn't address the problem the way Zachary Taylor did, which I often have told the story that, you know, the southern states almost left the Union during Zachary Taylor's presidency, which was about 15, 20 years before President Lincoln. And he called them to the White House and said, which I believe also Jackson did at one point, if you secede from the Union, Senator, I will summon the army and you are the first people that I will shoot. Now, that wasn't necessarily letting the Constitution work, but he sufficiently frightened them and was strong enough to prevent them from seceding in 1845 or 6 or whenever that story happened. Buchanan didn't address the problem, ran away from the problem, was pusillanimous, and thus we had a worst-case scenario. So policy can sometimes fail, and often fails spectacularly, like 9/11. And then there is America. You know, there is actually two Americas, really. There's the government America, and then there is the America, the people, doing what we do in spite of whatever the government does. So when I look around for someone to blame for the problems we face, I blame us. I don't blame the politicians. I don't blame the system. I don't blame democracy. I don't blame the republic, because our problems are our problems. In some, this summer is now being called the summer of our political discontent. Whether you're excited or horrified by the rhetoric that you're hearing, just remember, you can't just demand a problem be solved and walk away, which is what I've been talking about for a long time in these podcasts. You can't focus on one personality to become president and solve all these problems, because you can get that. But the personality who is sent to office, who rides that wave to office, discovers that the presidency, the Senate, Congress, Supreme Court, cabinet positions, these are all political positions. These are not button-pushing positions. These are not the kinds of positions where if you want a pour-over, they do it. Or if you want a new latte, they can make it for you because they can push a button. These are political positions in political sense, not business sense, not religious fervor, not a desire to help people drives these institutions. And if you've heard my speech about politics, it's just simply sometimes blood and bone and balls is what it comes down to. And people have to understand how politics works in order to make all of these parts work properly. Real leaders will have to ride this tiger and indeed tame this tiger in order to be effective. Most of the time, the leaders that can do that come along once in a generation, and I haven't seen that kind of a leader this summer of our discontent, and I haven't seen that kind of a leader in quite some time. I'm not sure that one will come in this generation. So what's left is for people to do and build the groundwork so that that kind of a leader can come along. More often than not, what you get is a man on a horse. You get someone who is going to make the government work and ends up making the government work against the people. Now, what have I seen in this political season so far when I go out and cover these events? I've seen a lot of rolled up sleeves. I've seen a lot of weird hats. I've seen a lot of strange haircuts. I've seen a lot of bad speeches. And I've seen a lot of demonstrations for the TV cameras. And I've seen a lot of media saying 600 people showed up for that, 800 people showed up for this. And I went to an air show and watched an amazing genius of a man who designed airplanes and was never interested in politics speak to over 1,000 people. And there were over 1,000 people for any kind of speech or discussion of aircraft and flying and the whole thing every single night of the air show, which went on for 7 days. You know, no one yet in all of these so-called political events, which really aren't that big of a deal, shows the command of the details and the political skill or the gift to get it across and knit it all together, you know, in terms of the political spectrum. So on both sides of the political spectrum, I would just say this. People are looking to personalities. They're looking to simple solutions. And I would say be careful of what you pray for, because you might just get it. Well, the planes are starting to come back in, so I got to thank xgovernmentcars.com for sponsoring the Bob Davis podcast. Don't forget, if you're looking for, people say, why do you have that car, the cop car? Because it's a great car, and it was cheap, and it's affordable. Why would you go out and spend a fortune for a brand new Yukon when you can get an Expedition or a Yukon, if that's what you want, from xgovernmentcars.com? It's going to run great, it's going to look great, and it's way, way, way more affordable. Plus, you're going to get easier credit approval, and they take trades. So don't forget all those things. If you're interested in more information, call 763-777-8782 or visit xgovernmentcars.com. I often say get your butt down to xgovernmentcars.com, 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. And here comes, I'm going to speak to these planes. You ready? Here we go.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Got to thank the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com, Mad K Studios, creating quality original automotive artwork. And Mad K will be out at a lot of these antique auto shows this summer. I'll tell you more about him as he tells me. Sometimes he tells me, sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes I find out on Facebook, like the one up in Anoka and the State Fairgrounds, after the fact. But Mad K is great. They do original automotive artwork, not just a picture, but actually a painting of a favorite car or something you built or something that you really loved or something your parents had. So it's worth checking out. And thank you guys for listening and donating at the BobDavisPodcast.com. I do have to say the donations are great, and I really appreciate whether they're $10 or $5 or $50 or $150. If you're listening on Stitcher.com, thank you. iTunes or TuneIn. Different apps for different types of devices also available at Blog Talk Radio and what was the other one? I always forget it. Oh, yeah, TuneIn has actually a player, so you can go to the TuneIn site and listen. And thank you for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And again, thanks for the donations, because the donations go to crowdfund the podcast mobile unit, which, of course, is the ambulance. And we're going to be heading out to Sturgis next. Very excited about the trip out to Sturgis. I had a choice. I could go to the Republican debate on August 6th, or I could go to Sturgis. And I decided I'm going to Sturgis because I still think this summer of our discontent is really the summer of our discontent for the media and a few very involved media people and political people in Iowa. So I'm not going to go to the debate. We're going to let that one go, and we'll find another political event to go to later. We're going to Sturgis, and that's going to be great. And thank you for listening to Podcast 395 and putting up with the planes, even though we're not at the air show. It sure sounds like we are. Here at the broadcast bunker on the flat with the fire and the bugs and the trees.
Oh, to live on Sugar Mountain with the barkers and the colored balloons. You can't be 20 on Sugar Mountain, though you're thinking that you're leaving there too soon.